Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And I don't know about you, but I remember who I am. This is Will Bluewater, Tohiju, Tohigu, OCO everybody. I'm well, and hoping you are fine. We've got a really special guest. This is the first time we've actually interviewed a a real celebrity. I've been following this fella since the 80s, and ever since the movie with Eric Roberts. And we're just going to welcome Danion to the show. Danion Brinkley.
Yep.
And your mic is live. How are you this evening?
I am happy and completely filled with joy.
that's good to hear. As I was telling you, we like to do break the ice a little bit. We do a Mayan birth reading. You may have had one done before, but not like Mark Borcherding does them. And Mark's a real digger. And He's kind of like this animal here. All right, he's a badger. Anyway, he's most of our guests feel like they've been read like a book when Mark gets done. So take it away, Mark.
Well, the badger in the Hopi is the healing clan. So the badger is the healer. Just as strong, actually almost really on par with the bear medicine. So in the traditional Mayan day count, Daniel was born on a day called Six Ahau, or Six Sun. And that is actually the name for the next world cycle we're moving into.
There you go.
So the six number has a lot to do with a lot of tests and testing and challenging, things to learn and evolve into. The Ahau is the glyph of the sun, our grandfather sun, and it has a lot of connections. People are going to learn a lot more in the future really what the sun is really all about. And so now the next part of the ring we're going to do is with what we call the Six Sun Zolk'in, or Six Ahau Zolk'in. And so we're going to take a look at that right now, and it's going to have three components to it: a forward flow of time, a backward flow of time, and where these two time flows to come together. And where they come together in the unity point of the two time flows, backward and forward, that is probably exactly what the people that have a near-death experience go into. They call it no time, or a balancing of the two time flows, where it kind of doesn't exist, sort of. So we'll start with the forward flow of time first, which is the way we normally perceive time. And on Danian's, it's a seven chakan. Has to do with strong, probably all of his life, he's had a pretty strong instinct to survive. But along the way with that survival instinct, he also carries an aspect of ability to tune into things and sacred power. And when I say tune into things, I mean everything, and especially Creator, and especially, I would say, all of his life. Even prior to some of his experience, he probably had an above-average, normal feeling somewhere inside him of being connected to everything in creation. Even without a near-death experience, he was probably having an aspect of that. On the backward flow of time, this is stuff that's going to be maybe shown up in his life more recently, say 1997, 1998 for most people. And his in here is a 16 Kowak, and that is actually the day that one of the white buffaloes was born on, the one called Miracle Second Chance in Janesville, Wisconsin. It was the second of the two white buffaloes born at Janesville, Wisconsin. So that suggests that Daniel might want, if he hasn't already looked into it, he might want to explore that whole story a little bit, because there might be something in that for him, especially things that have to do with pulling family together, the universality of all, bringing everything together again, and also the ability to tap into, beyond the illusion of reality, supernatural power and ancestors. This may indicate Daniel may have some ancestors lurking around on the native side of the fence. Maybe even Lakota or some of the other tribes that have a affinity for the whole white buffalo tribe, which is a lot of them, actually. And this is bringing an aspect of in his life of healing, a lot of healing energy. And what they call the Lord of the Wind of the Water, they also called him the Skillful Hand or the Healing Hand, Hand Kabul, stuff like that. So that's an aspect. Now, where these two time flows come together, this is kind of how he gets from one place to another, from one world cycle to another, and brings people with him. And his is really all about dreams, dreaming, intuition, balancing that with regular, normal waking life. So kind of being able, he can hear, reach across that veil kind of any time he wants. But balancing that side with this side is what's going to really help him out. And it's that's going to bring in an increase in his ability to have visions and, you know, prophetic things. Ancestors is coming up here again in Kuwak, and Kuwak is also called the thunder symbol or the storm symbol. And so he might look for things that have an aspect of that, like lightning or rainstorms or things like that. You know, connections to ancestors might be especially powerful during those kinds of storms. It looks to me like a lot of what is ancestor power and energy is going to be showing pathways, new paths, how to use that dreaming and intuition and balance it, and the ego energy of vision, and especially when it has to do with things relating to community and cooperation within a community. Is going to be where it's going to be really probably very powerful for him. And a lot of this energy is in the direction of the west. There are black color glyphs. The first glyph, the Chacon glyph, is a red, so it's more east. So he has east and west here. But most of his energy is sitting in the west, and which would also be, for the natives, that's where they say you die, you walk west, right? So that would tie in with some of his past life, his experiences in his life. Now, I'll go over another thing that I happened to look up, was the date of his first near-death experience. And there's a couple of interesting things there. One thing that's interesting is in the unity time flow that we talked about, his reading for his first near-death experience would be a 9-eek, which is Blue Otter's birth sign.
Well, it's Quetzalcoatl, the more important. Yeah, wow.
Well, it's both, yeah. So I would not be surprised if the Quetzalcoatl energy showed up right there in that near-death experience. But it goes beyond that. Something a little bit more interesting is in all three, the forward flow of time, backward flow of time, and the unity flow, his near-death experience is a perfect match for the date that the third secret of Fatima was given.
Wow.
I would not be surprised if in that experience that he may have actually been given insight into one aspect of the second half of that third secret, which would have to do with the purification. I would not be surprised.
Take that, New York Times. Take that, all you naysayers. Now everybody knows why Danyan's so connected.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. But so we got, when we have the two things put together, we had the Six of How, which is the next world cycle, and now we have the third secret, which on the sixth apparition, it was the miracle of the sun, and about the purification of the world, which will lead us into the next world cycle or the new sun. So Danyan has connections on both sides of the fence here. In other words, over on the other side and on this side and getting through it. But a large part of him getting through it is really going to be his ancestors, dreaming, intuition, community, cooperation within the community, and the seeing his vision and using that for helping to bring together a oneness in the world, harmony. In the nutshell, it's exactly what Christ said. I am the Father in one, I am in you, you are in me. That's it. And Danyan, the key part I'm seeing here that will help him is maybe the ancestors. Look for ancestors, because there's going to be some ancestors. If they haven't already showed up and he doesn't already know them, they're around. And some of them are probably Lakota.
Well, I was going to say, with South Carolina ancestry, I wouldn't be surprised if he's got some Cherokee ancestry. Maybe he'll share that with us.
Anything with the white buffalo, and a lot of tribes have a connection in the white buffalo, so it could be any of them. you know, I just brought up Lakota because it's the, you know, it's the most obvious. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service, Daniel, and your service is continuing with your work with the folks that are getting ready to pass. And the time is yours. This is this show is completely unscripted and run by the Spirit. Probably disorganized and disjointed, but
I don't think that. I don't think that at all, Will. I mean, I don't think that at all. I mean, I have been a Mayan follower. I went to the 1968 Olympics to see Jimmy Hines run the 100. And in between boxing and track and field was ice skating and water polo and all kind of garbage like that. And somebody said, do you want to go see the pyramids? Well, being from South Carolina, who cares? There's no pyramids but in Egypt. And this is 1968. So we got in the car and drove to like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we pulled out in an open field and we found a flat surface and we rolled out a little bedrolls and we went to sleep. When I woke up that morning, I was at Teotihuacan sleeping on the slab in front of the Pyramid of the Moon. None of it was excavated. It was just a field full of trash with these most magnificent places. At that moment, I think it was around September the 17th when I got struck by lightning in 1975, but this is around September the 16th or the 17th when I discovered Teotihuacan. I spent the next 4 months riding in buses. I went to Yucatan, Guatemala, Honduras, now Belize, and I went to literally every Mayan site that was discovered then, and in the last 45 years, I've probably been in Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, all over Yucatan, everything. I'm basically a pre-classic lover. I'm not much of the classic or the post-classic period, but I look at the pre-classic period in this place that they just discovered in Guatemala that really puts them back instead of 3114 B.C., BCE, it puts the Mayan culture into a spot before it was Mayan, but they were really smarter. They were even smarter more as astrophysicists at that time. Then there was a lull period. And understanding that the Mayans operate in cycles, which is more pronounced and more defined than literally every other tribe except some nature of the Hopi. And I think before the Aztec, Toltec, and the Mayotec came into certain places of power, especially the Toltecs, I believe there's a direct connection between the Hopi and the Maya. You know, when
yeah.
you look at the Huichca, and then, you know, everybody's big on the Inca. Well, who in the heck were the Inca? They were 200 years, and they'd already had the road system built. And the Mulche, the oldest city in the Americas, is in northern Peru. So when people start really looking and start to really listening to your show, you're giving them a chance to reconnect to the nature. The first real mystical power is the native nation's tradition. And you will never break through it, no matter how much Western mythology and religion and concepts and communion, you'll never be able to overwhelm the spiritual nature of Mother Earth and Father Sky. And if you watched exactly what Mark was saying, we're in the transition period after 2012. You know, you have that 400-day grace period, Mark. You know this well. There's a 400-day grace period. That was put us at January, somewhere around January the 27th, 2014. Then you have that three-year period, 14, 15, 16. And I believe that the birthing cycle will be sometime in April 2017. And we're witnessing right now, you know, as the old system passes away, they say that all things done not in integrity would collapse. And look at 2008. Our religions, our institutions, our governments, banks, everything is gone because it's built on a lie. And now comes the universal. that place where everything begins to be aware that it's connected. So as you were giving me that cyclic nature of the backflow and the forward flow, and it matches the new cycle, that shows that you're smart. It shows that you understand the cyclic nature of how it's happening. And I moved from South Carolina to Las Vegas because I moved west because Las Vegas is, people don't get it. It's a vortex. And it's so based on the power of co-creation and the power of free will. When you put those places, what people call temptation are really spiritual opportunities. And when you use all that stuff about the devil and going to hell and all that Catholic business, then you lose the value of who you are. And I think that what you're saying, I mean, I think we're all German Jews. I think that my ancestry are German Jews and then Norwegian. So I don't know quite yet how the ancestor tribal connection fits in there, but I will be watching for it. I paid attention to the Lakota, you know, all the different powers of the Sioux or the Great Plains. And I can remember, and I want to ask you, because this was in the mid-70s, I got into the Chiricahua Apache and the Mescalero Apache because I bought a piece of property in New Mexico. And I was a kid, you know, I was in my 20s. And I came out of the Marine Corps, and I went on this piece of land in High Rolls, New Mexico, which is absolutely nowhere, and I bought this piece of land. And on it, I found this cave, and in this cave was a bunch of what would have been a wagon train, trunks and clothes, and I donated it to the History Museum, the museum in New Mexico. But it was one of where Cochise's raiding parties would come out of Mexico, and they would use these caves to do raids on the trail. So, excuse me, maybe that might be the connection that you're talking about.
Well, very well could be, because that one that I told you about on the Unity Flow, that's an Ankh-Bal glyph, the one I talked about, dreaming and intuition and all that.
Well, all that came with the
lightning.
That
is also considered a cave symbol.
Well, all of that came with the lightning. I don't have a pre-knowledge, except as what you're describing to me. I don't have a pre-knowledge of connection. You know, I was a warrior. And that was my nature, and my nature was, I'm absolutely no question about my survival instincts, I'm still here. And when I look at the, when I got addicted to the Maya, you know, it's an addiction I have. I've been there probably 100 times. And this is what's so great. 2 hours from Houston, everything you've ever been taught by the white man turns into rubbish. You can go to Uxmal and Palenque, and you can realize that that everything a white man's ever taught you turns into utter nonsense. And if you look at Teotihuacan, I mean, people get all caught up in Tulum and post-classic periods, you know, which I don't think much of. But Belize and Guatemala are those two bases. So if you really believe what history is telling you, go to the Yucatan. I saw Cancun when it didn't have a paved road. There was Cancun and Cozumel and all those places. There was nothing but fishing villages when I first saw Tulum, and it was covered in weeds. And I rode buses with chickens and little tiny short Mayan, you know, no, I've never seen a Mayan over 5'2". And I traveled all through that period. So I think that if people really want to be smart and they want to understand the cyclic natures of their spirituality, nobody is smarter in the Western Hemisphere than the Maya. And maybe just a touch of the Olmecs. It's always been amazing to me, Will and Mark, how two completely separate cultures evolved. And if you look at the Olmecs, you see that they have stone, 70-ton stone carvings of all five races. White, Caucasian, Chinese, Negroid, Native Nations. they have all these nation, all these places done, and they have knowledge of it. And I'll tell you something that's really funny, because you have to look at, to try to understand, you can go to Uxmal, and you can look at the structure of Uxmal and how it's been named and what it looks like. And then you can go to Kashmir in India, and there is a place identical to Uxmal, I mean, it is identical to Uxmal, in just below Kashmir in India, and they speak an ancient dialect of Maya. So where was the original knowledge of the cyclic nature of reality? Where did they come from? And how did it come from to the Americas and also go to India at the same time? This is when you start to really get a grip on there's more to it than what some white people brought over here to the Americas long before the Pope got into the game.
You mentioned a couple of dates while you take a breather. 2017, around Passover time, lines up perfectly with Daniel's timeline, and people can watch the Daniel's timeline video on YouTube. And in 2008, in the fall, that was the end of a 2,730-year decree that Ezekiel pronounced against the northern kingdom of Israel, which is descendants of northern Europe and all over the rest of the world. But they that was interesting, because those two dates were really, really key dates and things that are going on here recently. And you mentioned,
but just look what happened to, look at where the European Union is, so the so-called rise of the Antichrist, the
right,
you know, the member nations being rebirthed, and what the British, you know, this is, people don't really stop to realize that you have the District of Columbia, you have the City of London, and you have the Vatican. Every one of them has an obelisk. Every one of them are cities within a cities. And one of the banking systems of the entire globalization of the Kazan structure is now pulled out. London's people, the everyday people, you know, they see they're being messed with, and they see they're being dictated by the creation of this world government. And when you look at what's happening, the only thing you better watch next is Germany. I would say that Germany is in more trouble today. And you watch Deutsche Bank. If I look at how the Mayans, how the Mayan cycles would operate, knowing that we go from this last, so all that has to collapse. So what's happening in Europe today fits perfect in the Mayan cycle. In the 24,920-year end from the solar system moving from the outer edge to the galactic sun of the middle, which takes 24,920 years, we would stay there 400 days before we start back to our normal place in the solar system. And when you see this, that's, everybody has to stop and realize the world didn't come to an end December 21st, 2012. A cycle ended.
Well, it's also a 2012, going from 2012 to 2032 is going to be a Catan cycle. So the... And
well, I won't make it to that one. I won't make it to 2032, but, you know, I'll be somewhere paying attention, but I won't be here.
Well, we're in it. That's the time. If you look at their prophetic things about that Catan, they basically say, from some of the traditions, during this Catan cycle, they say it will be the time where everything literally just falls apart.
It's already done that.
So, yeah. But
yeah, it's
they also
that.
They also bring in another aspect to it that I don't know exactly when, but they also say it will be a time of, well, from the Catholic or Christian Catholic or whatever point of view, maybe even somewhat the Native point of view, they say it will be the judgment, or in Hopi context, the purification. So we have a very good chance of having that occur during this Katun cycle.
I have no doubt. There is no doubt in me. People who know me and know who I am know that the what's called the boxes of knowledge since 1975, I missed some of the dates because nothing's carved in stone, but I haven't missed anything else from the collapse of the Soviet Union, Chernobyl, Fukushima. I wrote it in Saved by the Light, Chapter 5 in Saved by the Light. I went through this big issue called the environmental religion, and I never could quite figure out from 1975 how you could have an environmental religion when the greatest nature of the rise of the Catholic Church was to put down paganism, was those of us who worship the earth as a living being, and we believe that the atmosphere and the sun is all a part of a creative process. I didn't believe that before 1975. But when you stop and you realize, I was describing climate change or global warming. And I wrote this in 1975. I wrote 1976. Took me like a, you know, I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. And it took 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. So it was probably into 1976 when I wrote them down. And then it was in 1992 and 3 when I wrote Saved by the Light. And if you look at those, you see, like you were talking about, insight and perspective. And I live in both worlds. I'm a hospice volunteer. I've been a hospice volunteer for 39 years. And by that nature, because I like to be around people who are in transition because I know where they're going. And I have a really good connection to the other world, to that dimension. So I'm very comfortable with the fact that we make these transitions from both sides. And I can cross to that side. I have more, quote-unquote, dead friends than I have living friends.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Let me ask you a question. Will, let me ask you a question. What inspired you and Mark to bring this show on the air? What was the impetus for you guys to bring this type of show on the air?
Well, it kind of goes back to experiences I started having back in the mid-80s when I didn't know that it was Mad Bear Anderson at the time, didn't know till 96, but he appeared to me in a dream, and he said, well, when are you going to do something about, and he mentioned my Cherokee, I knew who my Cherokee fifth great grandfather was. He says, when are you going to do something about his genealogy? And then over a period of time, a certain book in Salt Lake City led me to an author who introduced me to Rolling Thunder and Thomas Bunyakya. And then my first wife passed away in 95, and she told me, she was very prophetic all her life, but she said, I said, well, you know, what can you tell me about my work? She says, you haven't even started your own work. And she said, your work's with your own people. And with being out west, I didn't have much contact. I got into graduate school in my 40s, late 40s. And things didn't work out. They worked out the way they were supposed to, but I ended up moving my family. I married my first wife's best friend, and we moved back to Missouri. And there, I met a lot of traditionalist Cherokees. One of whom was John Red Hat Duke. He was a bird colonel in the Air Force, and he was a traditional Cherokee elder in both the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the United Ketua Band. And he and I kind of hatched this thing, and just kind of grew up slowly. And then your good friend Robert Ghostwolf and I got quite involved back in about 2003, and produced all.
Oh,
he and
I loved him.
I know.
He
told me. He told me about your early morning conversations, and it's really interesting when he passed away. About 10 days after he passed away, my wife woke up early one morning and I heard her gasp, and like she always did when she had a dream. And I said, "Okay, what'd you see, Betty?" And she said, "I saw a wolf." And yeah, well, what else? And I didn't, you know, prompt her. I said, "Did you see anybody else?" "Yeah, rolling thunder." And she says, "And I saw that chief that was frozen in the snow." I said, "Honey," I said, "you just described three ghost dance chiefs." And because Wolf had run a ghost dance in 98, and Rolling Thunder had actually run one or two, but he had banned at least the version, the militarized version of the ghost dance where Indians prayed for the death of whites, because there was a group of mixed
blood. I don't blame him. I would have been praying for the death of whites myself.
Well, these guys were mixed bloods, and they were doing the militarized version of the ghost dance, and an airplane crashed right on them. So anyway, it just kind of grew from there, and gee whiz, and it was really painful, because I had was disabled by central sleep apnea, which is probably one of the doctor told me in 94 when he did my sleep test, he says, "You wake yourself up 100 times a night, no, an hour."
Wow.
And it was probably what a creator designed, you know, so because I have dreams and visions too. And but I guess my big awakening was in 98 spring solstice, which I later found out was the beginning of a 9-week cycle. I was told in a dream, I was told in the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc, because many or most computers in the planet may shut down because the weather will become so bad. And wake up and write that down. So I did. And after I started this program, one of the first person I interviewed was an Orthodox rabbi in Jerusalem. And those guys really take prophecy seriously. And I interviewed him. Well, he landed in Houston the day Katrina hit. And he was there for a Noah, the Sons of Noah convention. And in November, he sent me a link to a Toronto newspaper where a UN climatologist had said that 2005 was the hottest year on record and was a year of weather havoc. And he said, as far as he knew, that was the most detailed fulfillment of prophecy in 2,600 years. Actually, later on, when I reminded him of saying that, he says, "Did I say that? Because it doesn't sound like something I'd say, you know." And, you know, people say things when they're under the influence of spirit. So I just, you know, I just kind of dragged this thing along, have done it without any income. I personally haven't had any personal income in 7 years. I have had to, you know, completely rely on others and the spirit to keep this thing going. And it seems to be lurching along pretty well.
Well, I'm really proud, because, I mean, when you look at, when people do radio shows, it always interests me what motivates people to, in this particular time period. I am I'm a lover of the Maya, and I can remember conversations with Robert, him calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting at the computer. So we would have, you know, it got to be where 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning got to be the time we would talk. And he was so wonderful a guy. And let me ask you this, Will, when you look at the Cherokee, I mean, and the Trail of Tears, the genealogy of the Cherokee could have become so diluted, because there is the Yamasee, in South Carolina you have some Choctaw, you have the Cumbee, you have the Yamasee, you have a few Iroquois, but they weren't, you know, that's more the northern. But when you had the Cherokee that connected to what was called the Edistos, you know, all along there's like 11 different tribes, and like 4 of them are recognized. So how would you do a genealogy based on the Trail of Tears to come to the place where you could see ancient Cherokee prophecy? We all know Hopi prophecy, like the day of destruction was when the sun would be on the light switch on the click on the wall. I mean, I know a lot of the Hopi, but how would you do a genealogy on the Cherokee with such a, I mean, such a destructive force from the Trail of Tears into Oklahoma? Because you got Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Cherokee literally all mixed together in those reservations.
Well, the first thing you'd want to do is go to our oral history of the when the United Ketuaban was the first Cherokee entity that was recognized by the federal government in 1949, and the federal government used, as far as they were concerned, it was the Ketua, which are the religious authorities of the Cherokee Nation, and always have been, probably going clear back to when before we migrated across the Eastern Ocean. But and the Ketua.
So where do you think the original Ketua? You think there is right there, the tribe of Dan, or I mean, where in the Eastern concept does the Cherokee come? Because you can see a lot of the technology that the Maya had that was later used by the Moors as the Moors invaded southern Europe. So much of what they knew came from Maya tradition. I mean, if you look at the Moors, and the Moors occupied southern Europe 700 years, and you look at the Maya, because the Maya invented the zero. And then 800 years later, the Moors introduced the system of adding a zero. And without the Maya, Bill Gates wouldn't have a job.
Yeah. Well,
so where do you think the Cherokee originated from?
Well, our people say that we migrated across the Eastern Ocean. In the 1930s, there was an ethnologist that came down from Harvard University, and he examined Cherokee burials. And he said that all the other Indians in North America are moon-faced or round-faced. He says, but your people look more like people from Northern Europe. Now John Red Hat points out, now I've sat down with several rabbis, and when I explained to them, the number one, we're not speaking our original language, and very little of original language is really known. And in 1721, the main body of the Cherokees migrated back to Mexico. And that's the reason why Sequoia died in his third attempt to try to locate them. But the people that migrated back to Mexico, that they eventually wrote a letter in 1860 to Tahlequah saying, we are at Lake Chapala, and we are moving southward. And you probably met some of them when we were down there. There's even supposed to be a city up in the King Mountains.
No question. I know that.
But they,
I know an awful lot. I mean, probably a lot from the inspiration of Robert. But I know an awful lot about the native tribes of central Mexico, southern Mexico, and most of northern South America. I'm not Amazonian, but you notice the people are the same statue. And what it was about,
right,
the Cherokee. The Cherokee had the elongated face, the high cheekbones, and the...
Right.
Pronounced chin, which that's why I was asking that.
Well, I sent you to your Facebook account, I sent you a link, a couple of different things. One of them was to the Cherokee Nation of Mexico website, where it shows what are, you know, bearded men wearing turbans that lived alongside the Maya. And also Donald Panther Yates, who's a DNA consultant, has done a DNA study and traced our mixed DNA back to 250 BC with the Maya. So Dr. Tim Jones, who holds a double doctorate in archaeology ethnology, says that the Hopi and the Cherokee anciently were known as the Twin Fires, and when either one of them opened their mouth in Grand Council, which was every once in a while, you know, the tribes would gather in from all over the country, sometimes to Hot Springs and other places. But if they open their mouth, everybody else can shut up and listen. But the Ketua claim that if there is a spiritual message to be given to the Indians in North America, that that it would come through them, and there has been a lot that has come through our bloodline, and but we the language that the Iroquois speak that we migrated up from Mexico and we fought a war with the mound builders probably about 1,000 years ago, and to settle that war we agreed to intermarry with them, and they were known to be a taller.
But you're talking Ohio, you're talking Ohio, Pennsylvania, Mississippi, in that area. Because there was year before last, they discovered a Maya settlement in Georgia.
Georgia, right.
Yeah, a Maya settlement in Georgia, and close to the, and did trading with the Cherokee and the Beach tribe.
Right, and there are Mayans, you know, as far north as Wisconsin, but after the mound builders, the war with the mound builders, we moved into the Ohio Valley, and that's where we encountered the Iroquois, and to settle that war, we agreed to stop speaking our original language and speak theirs, but they obviously have a connection with ancient Israel, and when I tell rabbis this, they're astounded. And
the Algonquin. I mean,
they do. That's correct.
When you look at the French and Indian Wars, and you look at the Iroquois and the relationship between the Algonquin, there was no question that the French recognized the French and the Cathars and all of that stuff after the Malta and the Knights of Malta and then the Knights Templar, they recognized it, especially the Cathars recognized that when the French and Indian Wars came. They could see even symbols, signs, and some letters used by the Algonquin and the Iroquois from ancient Israel.
It's pretty cool, man.
You know how cool that stuff is.
Well, yeah. I mean, this one rabbi, Orthodox rabbi, he says, man, he says, you know, all synagogues have got an entertainment budget. And he said, you ought to take this on the road. You know, when I told him the Cherokee, the Cherokee word for a speaker for everyone is Kalanu. And that's the position I hold with the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. Now, the word Kalanu in Hebrew means all of us. And in Cherokee, it means the speaker of all of us. Now, the word our people in Hebrew is Ami, and in Iroquoian, it's Ani. And interestingly enough, Abraham's third wife's name was Keturah. And in the original Cherokee dialect that's known as the Eastern or Southern dialect, that was centered in South Carolina, they had the R sound. And I was laughed at to derision for several years, and now the Eastern band has allowed, hey, you know, we did have a liquid R, and wasn't just that, we had the M and the R, and it was the M and R speakers that the remnants of the old chants from the old religion that are known only to our priests, like Dr. Rogers, and maybe five or six other people left. But so the word Ketua in the old dialect would have been Keturah. So we're the people of Keturah, and Abraham sent away Keturah and her two sons and blessed them to know all about herbalism and shamanism. And that's a matter of, so, you know, when I tell rabbis that, they go, oh my gosh, you know, it's obviously a connection.
They're a lot smarter than they let on, and you know they've become, because of the Karzana, most people who call themselves Jews now are Northern Europeans.
That's
right.
It's
not the original tribes. It's not what were the original Hebrews who migrated from Egypt and who were there 3,000 years ago. These are mostly after the Hittites. you know, the Hittites and then the Mughals and then what was called the Kazazians, who came and conquered that region that most of the Ottoman Empire literally melted into the control of it. They're mostly Northern Europeans. That's why I was looking at the connection of what inspired you to bring this nature and this part of you into a radio show. I don't like the idea that you don't make any money doing it, but other than that, I'm really proud that you're doing it, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've likewise. Well, I you know, I
Blue get Otter, you know, going back to his thing about, you know, in the East, what isn't there, I think you've looked at it a little bit, I don't know, I haven't looked into it too much, but isn't there some connection between the cranial structure and maybe other physiology with the
right.
Cherokee and the Phoenicians?
Well, the Dolus of Cephalic long-headed skull like the Jews have is what, if you Google the terms Cherokee X-Files, you'll find a page I put up years ago that talks about some of the anomalies, one of which, back in 2001, I got to talking with a fellow named Govinda Sanyal, who was a Nottoway descendant, but his father was a Brahmin from India, and he was a school psychologist in Staten Island, and he married the state dancer of India. And when he went back to India to get married, his father whispered the name of his clan in his ear, and he was absolutely shocked because it was the exact same word that had been told to him by a Chickasaw, and the Chickasaw say that they migrated across the Eastern Ocean, landed in Mexico, and migrated up the Gulf Coast to where they are now in Mississippi. But another odd thing was the word for... the Cherokee word for Kentucky, Gondugi, he said Gondugi is the name of the mountain that the Ganges River flows out of. And
wow.
Dr. Yates, oh, yeah, that's not all. I'll send you a link to that page. And
this Daryl? Are you talking about Daryl Yates?
Donald Panther Yates. He's DNA consultants, and he was a professor, I believe, in South Carolina. Yeah, he was at UNC. UNC.
Yeah,
and,
that's Daryl. Daryl Yates.
And then he moved out to, I believe, Arizona, where he's really shaking things up in the DNA sphere of influence. But
you can't do anything with those Carolinians, man.
yeah, that's right.
Turn those hillbillies loose on the world, my goodness.
That's right. And, you know, Terry Miller, he keeps the sacred fire that was moved from the reservation or the Catoosa area in Oklahoma to North Carolina some years ago. And, you know, all his people, of course, you know, it's well known that when Spanish or when pirates were sailing out of Cartagena, and there were Jews among them, and it's well known that they were coming and doing mining in the Carolinas. And when, of course, the Cherokee name for the priests call him Yohiwa, the name we told the English back in the 1700s was Yowe. But when people say, oh, well, the Cherokee, they just heard some Jews mention the name of God. Well, by the time in the 1400s, 1500s, when those Jews came up, they were miners, they had completely forgotten the second permutation of the name of God, which is Yohiwa. And so, you know, we had it from the beginning, and the fact that we call ourselves keepers of the fire, if you go into the first Maccabees story, you know, you read about the keepers of the fire from the Holy Temple, they packed up and left Jerusalem, and they're known as the sons of Zadok. And in the last days, the sons of Zadok are to settle all arguments. So, you know, that's who we are. We're keepers of the fire, and we're just doing what we do.
I'm just proud. It's like you said, that you let the divine guide you. And, I mean, and I just always appreciate, you know, I have a deep appreciation for people who create pathways for understanding, since basically 95% of everything. I always say, if you really want to really mess something up, bring some white people there and leave them about a week. And if you want to really get it really screwed up, just bring some white people there. And we have to get back to the natural nature of what's really true, as opposed to what the stories that have been laid upon us, you know. And we have to find ways, and I was just complimenting you and helping to find these ways back so that people can begin to truly integrate with the transitional nature of what the new cycle. I always like the Maya because they count down. You know, most calendars go into the future. But, you know, what's so funny is most people never stop to realize that the Chinese calendar, the Hebrew calendar, the Mayan calendar, the Olmec calendar, the Aztec calendar, all these calendars came into existence between 3104 BCE and 3114 BCE. Every calendar in the world that's recognized all happened within 10 years of each other. And how in the world can you have the Maya have the same Chinese as the Hebrew dates if there was not a single source of this and there was not a place where this knowledge was held, so that within 10 years every major civilization came into existence with a calendar? Look at the Chinese calendar. Look at the Hebrew calendar. And the Maya were the greatest, most articulate understander of the cyclic nature of this dimension of the dream world. You know, the oldest, I think it's the oldest known oral language are in Australia. I mean, the Aborigines have a million years of an oral history. And then other than that, most oral histories are no more than 20,000 years old.
That's right. And they've found Abo DNA now down in around Tierra del Fuego. And when, you know, the Bible says originally all the landmass was together. And that's exactly where, in the scheme of things, Australia would have been connected to, was down there. So... And then the woman's DNA.
So you think that Australia would have been connected to South America?
That's what people
are
saying.
Or to Asia.
Who knows? When you look at
I think it would have to be Asia. I think that would have to be India. I mean, I was just thinking globally how when it was all one landmass.
You'd have to look at that Gondwana land theory, and but somehow maybe it was a migration. They've connected DNA in extreme southern South America with some mummies down there. So, don't know. It was something I heard. I haven't followed up on it. And then, you know, we're probably all descendant of theirs. You know, the woman, DNA they found in a cave in Israel, that migrated up from Africa. They, I think they call it the Seven Daughters of Eve, that DNA. I mean, everybody's descended from her.
Yeah,
so,
but that whole Eve story, when you go to look at Leakey and that whole Eve story, I mean, all of that stuff comes from two bones. I mean,
is that
you know,
right?
all the anthropological aspects of what people call everything would not fit. You couldn't fill up the top drawer of a regular chest of drawers with everything that modern day white people say where we came from.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I have a great strength and a belief in that they just found in Africa near Zimbabwe, near where Zimbabwe or Rhodesia, just north, they found a 200,000 year old settlement. And this almost forces us to go back and look, and they were gold miners. It almost forces us to go back to look at the original Zechariah Sitchin stories.
That's right.
Of how the earth came. I was a very, very close friend of Zechariah's. I mean, we almost went to jail. We were crossing from Syria into Lebanon during the war, and one of the guys with us did not forge his passport as well as I had forged mine in Zechariah's. So, but he was an Egyptian, so he got away with it, and Zachariah and I had to sit like 6 hours. We were going to Baalbek, and so we just became really close friends.
Yeah.
And he has and he says a lot of the same things. I mean, Zachariah, he kind of stuck to the Nibiru Sumerian translations, but he says a lot of the same things that you're saying, Will.
Well, I just repeat what other people say. I'm not a, I'm the kind of, Dr. Rogers and I are the same way. We kind of just let things come to us, and we connect dots rather than, I'm not a scholar. I just hear things and I'll either connect dots or make juxtapositions. Kind of like I was watching, watching reruns of X-Files here lately, and in one report, you know, Scully said that what she thought the most intelligent people were the ones that make connections or make arguments. And, you know, when I was a kid, my dad told me that he said, you ought to go into to litigation. You can make a saint swear.
Yeah, but it's
and my parents said the same thing.
Yeah, but it's great though. So I have I've enjoyed this time with you. I've appreciated it. I'd like to come back sometime, and I'm just really proud though, Will and Mark, and what you guys are doing. I'll go and look on my Facebook and see the stuff you sent me. I'm not like really a scholar, but you know, I can afford to, if something interests me, I can afford to buy a ticket. And the thing that's gotten me the most was when I saw Teotihuacan, I have now seen every known pyramid on every continent on the earth. I mean, everywhere. People don't understand they're in China. You know, our pyramids, I'm going to, I think it's in late September, I'm going to Tempe, and I don't know how close I can get to the Syrian-Turkish border, but I'm still going. I don't know if that's smart, being an American, but I'm going. And
the Kurds will go see the Kurds. They'll take care of you.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm going to try to stay out of that, but I want to see Tempe, and then I'm going to Romania. They found what they now believe to be one of the sacred places, one of the chambers of knowledge, much like they talk about in Egypt. And I was there just last year because I've been now looking for giants. And I see this place that they have. I went there and I had a government lawyer take us there. And you could see you have Kellogg there. You have the Carlyle Group here. All the people who have absolutely no business there are there. And there are American soldiers guarding this particular place called the Sphinx of Romania.
Well, yeah. Let me before you go. Let me point out that the documentary I saw showing the ruins of Babylon. I was trying to figure out why a 300-pound guy. The guy was almost as big as I am, wearing BDUs, and they were sanitized. He's standing there in a camera shot in front of this thing. I'm going, holy moly, and. Draw your own conclusions. But by the way, when Wolf died, I caretake all of his websites, and including all the pictures of the red-haired giants. And my friend Robert Three Eagles led him to those places, and that's how they got those photographs. And Robert's a guy you ought to contact because
send me a link.
He's found. He built his own nuclear resonance magnetometer, and he says every single burial has and he showed me one. It's a metallic ball, one pyramid inch in diameter, and that's how he finds the burials, and he's found over 200 of them.
I went with Robert in Utah. I mean, we went to see, and we cut a piece of cloth. We cut a piece of cloth, and we cut a sample of the hair. And we took it to UCLA, and they said that the coat was made from a long-haired camel that probably went extinct somewhere around 13,000 years ago. and the strand of hair, they could not match. They could not match the DNA as full human DNA. You know,
yeah.
And this guy had to be 11 feet tall. And what was amazing to me was the spirals. And I am the kind of person that doesn't desecrate a grave. I think that that's wrong. I mean, I just think it's wrong.
Well,
and,
speaking, I know you got to run, but speaking of spirals, I want to invite you to Honoring the Ancestors of Ancient America conference, and anybody else within earshot. It's in Nauvoo, Illinois, April or August 11th through the 13th, and then the elders will continue to meet for a week afterwards. But we are going to do the first real original ghost dance, just as Jesus Christ or the Messiah or some other white-bearded well, he wasn't quite white, he wasn't dark. Volvoca said he was kind of in between. And
well, Montezuma thought he was white.
Right.
They thought he had red hair.
And but Joseph Smith said that he was asking the Lord, when am I going to see you again? And he was more or less told, shut up, but if you live to be 85 years old, you'll see me again. And it was 5 days after Joseph Smith's 85th birthday. Of course, he died in 40 years earlier. The massacre at Wounded Knee happened because some Indians decided that they were going to change the message of the original ghost dance. But and then 5 days after Joseph Smith's 85th birthday, the massacre happened. But the original dance was documented by Tom Laughlin in 1975, and we're going to make probably the first real dance. Been talked about for a long time, but the songs were lost. But now we've got the songs. They were transcribed by the grandfather of my friend Joseph James Flaming Eagle Mooney. His great grandfather James Mooney was an ethnologist for Congress, and so
we'll send that to me because I want to know the dates.
We'll continue the conversation.
And anybody who's listening, I'm at danionandkatherine.com. It's Danion. Katherin, if anyone's interested in, and then the Twilight Brigade, which is our foundation. And thank you, Will, and thank you, Mark, both of you very, very much for having me on this show.
You bet.
And be blessed, my brothers.
We'll be in touch. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, bye.
Hey, good night now. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklava Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. One with me.